let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some art.
Kia ora, and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly brought to you this May by Creative Community. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz or find us on Spotify. Tonight, we are talking all things theatre with a very full studio. But to kick the show off, it's Mother's Day, so our music this evening are tributes to mums, stepmums, dads filling in the mum role, or anyone else that needs thanking this Mother's Day. To start us off, here's a song for Mama from Boys to Men.
Keep it inside. You're the driving force in my life. Yeah. There isn't anything or anyone that I could be, and it just wouldn't feel right if I didn't have you by my side. Oh, you were there for me to love and care for me when skies were gray. Whenever I was down, you were always there to comfort me. And no one else can be what you have been to me. You will always be, you will always be the girl in my life for all time. Mama, mama, yes it is, oh, 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 yes it is, yes it is, yes it is, oh, oh, oh. You're always down for me, have always been around for me, even when I was bad. You've shown me right from my wrongs, yes you did. And you took up for me when everyone was down on me, you always did understand. You gave me strength to go on.
There were so many times looking back when I was so afraid. And then you come to me and say to me, I can face anything. And no one else can do what you've done for me. You'll always be, you will always be the girl in my life.
You're the queen of my heart.
You are. food to my soul. Oh, yeah. You are the food to my soul.
Boys to Men, taking us back to our teenage days. Thanks, Emma. Happy Mother's Day to all the mums out there and the mums here in the studio tonight. Did you get spoiled rotten this morning, Emma? Breakfast in bed, was it?
No, breakfast in bed this morning. Although, husband knew that he wasn't there this morning, so he made breakfast yesterday morning, and I did get present last week from number one son and present this week from number two son. So it was very nice.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Well, happy Mother's Day to all the mums out there. And have you had you've had a big week. I've been busy with Sister Act opening, but you have got out and seen lots of shows.
I have. Now, I couldn't remember, but I think it was last week that I went to the opening of Westlake College's Mamma Mia, which was fantastic. I always love how Nick stages his shows in that school. I think it always works really well. And then Thursday night, I spent 2 hours in the car driving in that horrendous weather.
Awful.
To the Glen Eden Playhouse to see the opening of Marist College and St. Peter's College's Sister Act, which you directed. It was fantastic. I had a great night.
Thank you for coming. Brought back lots
of memories. Friday night, I trekked for another 2 hours to Albany to see Kristen School's Les Mis. Holy fajoli. I'd forgotten how amazing those shows were, like unlimited budget. Yeah. Oh, if I had those kind of budgets now, but the costumes, and more to the point, these were young kids singing those songs. The Valjean was just absolutely amazing. And I have to give a huge congratulations to their director, Hamish Mowat. This is his last show with Kristen after 8 years of working there. And what a show to go out on. Absolutely amazing.
And then you did a few hours drive down to see Bonnie and Clyde.
Do you know the funny thing, Wo?
It was the quickest trip.
It took me an hour and 20 to get down to Rivoli Theatre, and I was able to go, because you know how it's 110 down there, so I was kind of going 115 most of the day.
Have you ever thought of a helicopter to get around the amount of things that you need to do?
I want one of those... I just want one of those, you know, I jump in and it...
Transporter.
It puts me through the ether, like on Star Wars and all that, you know? What do you call them?
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean.
Okay, well, I only did one because my head was in my own show, but I did manage to catch Assassins today at the Dolphin Theatre, so well done to the team there. They haven't done a musical for so many years. Mm. It was nice to see a musical back up on that space. But I went on a Sunday. There's no treats on a Sunday, Emma. No Tuesday treats, Wednesday wheel. They need a Sunday slushie or something.
Did they not have their cup of tea?
Oh, yeah, they do that every time. Yeah.
I love that there's still a theatre club that at halftime put out tea and coffee and biscuits. It's like, how many theatre clubs do that now?
I know. Tea with real tea in the teapot too.
Crazy. Hey, we've talked enough. I think we need to introduce the three amazing people sitting in front of us.
We should. Well, from the fabulous team at Dusk Palace, we welcome back Rachel to the show for House of YOLO. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you very much.
And not only have you got a show coming up, but a brand new venue we're going to chat about tonight. Okay. So exciting night ahead. And from Stray Theatre, a big welcome to Violet and Felix. Welcome to the show, team.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you for having us.
It's great to have you here. Rachel, we'll kick it off with you. House of YOLO. It's opening your...
House. H-A-U-S. You've got to kind of sound cool.
It's very fashion.
Okay.
Yeah.
The House of YOLO.
Six made it famous with the House of Holbein.
All right, well, back to you, anyway. Rachel, with the House of YOLO opening, the New Zealand circus venue. Tell us, how exciting is this that you are opening this fantastic space?
It's very exciting. I'm in production week, so it's also incredibly overwhelming and exhausting.
So if you start rocking in the chair tonight,
that,
it's okay.
Yeah, beyond that, it's extremely exciting. Yeah, we have taken the lease of the Ellerslie War Memorial Hall, which is right in the Ellerslie Village.
Yes.
The Stables Theatre were there for decades and decades.
Oh, Emma, you and I used to come out of a funny dummy waiter in that venue, didn't we, at one point?
We used to do a dinner theatre there.
We're going back like 20-something years.
But those little roller doors from the kitchen, they're still there.
Brilliant.
We get the new bar.
Right.
Yeah.
So this show is to kick off this venue. How have you sort of, I guess, transported it out of being an old war memorial and into such a special space?
Well, we have we've taken over the whole building. For we're calling it Ellerslie Arts, is its new name. Ellerslie Arts, home of the Dust Palace, because it's at the base of our operations. So we'll be running, we're running our school out of there now. We're, it's a training space for circus artists. It's a place to do shows. But it's also still an operating theatre for people to do their own shows in, so it doesn't have to be just circus.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Theatre shows in there, comedy, music, whatever. We've got a side room, which is like a rehearsal room. It's also still a community space, so we've still got community users coming in. We've got square dancing and improv theatre and all this sort of stuff happening all around the week. Out the back used to be two Plunkett rooms, and they are now artist studios, which we have artist residents now. We've currently got a textiles artist and a theatre artist in the, in each studio.
Amazing.
So they're on monthly residencies. And yes, those are all the rooms. There's an office. That's great. That's where I am.
And did I see that? Is Gray involved in some way?
Gray Burton is the chair of our board.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. It was through the Grey Grapevine that we found out that Stables were about to move out of Ellerslie Theatre, of that hall, that they were shutting up shop, as it were. And so we got in touch with council and said, hey, we want a new home, because we were in a commercial lease that was crushing us. It was pretty existential for a minute there. And we went on quite a long journey with the Ōraki Local Board, who've been really amazing. And they have granted us a semi-commercial lease, which is the first of its kind, I think, for Auckland Council to be doing that. Most other arts venues that are leased to companies are on a sort of peppercorn lease. So we are not, but we are, the pitch that we made to the council was that we would have it as a home for our operations, but we would also keep it available to the community half the time. So it's really wonderful. And how we've changed it is we have erected a gigantic truss structure inside
the hall. I was just about to ask that question. I wonder what you had done for
everything. So we put this huge metal truss or steel truss structure inside the hall. So it'll look quite different when you come in. But the council did a refurbishment before we moved in. So it's had a fresh paint job, all new curtains, new floors, new surfaces, new carpets, new bathrooms, all that kind of stuff. So
amazing.
It's a lot fresher and newer. Yeah.
And how long has the Dust Palace been around? Because you've been going for a long time now.
15, 16 years.
Brilliant.
Yeah, 2009.
Emma, last night we had the Barfoot and Thompson Annual Awards, and the Dust Palace were our performers of the night, and can I say, just outstanding. And, I mean, you talk about the steel trusses that had to be erected in your venue. They had to erect them last night to make it all work for your team. Oh, my goodness, mind-blowing. And I was saying pre-show, Emma, real estate people in a bar, it's a bit of a slow process getting them into a theatre space. They, you know, do hang around at the bar. So your performers from Dust Palace just kept performing and looping while we got everybody in. They were amazing. So a big congratulations to that team last night.
How cool.
That's awesome.
All right, so moving from Ellerslie over to Stray Theatre, and you've got two shows on at the moment, because we're catching up next week with the Glass Menagerie. Can never say that.
Menagerie.
But Felix, this is She Kills Monsters.
Yes.
And what is that all about?
So She Kills Monsters is basically about a girl, Agnes, whose sister dies, and then... So to find a bit more of a connection to her sister, she goes on an adventure discovering D&D, basically.
Was this a book first or a TV series or something? Why do I feel like I know it? No, just the stage show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a stage show. If you know it, you may have dreamt it.
And you're directing this?
Yes, co-directing.
Co-directing. And Stray Theatre is, of course, community theatre but linked in with people at university, but doesn't have to be, is that right?
So it's a club for a university, but we act as a community theatre. It's very strange, basically.
Very strange.
But I mean, you have an incorporated society, you have a committee
with a constitution. But I think it originally started for just uni students, but it's grown over time to sort of welcome people outside of the university.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm not part of Auckland University, but I'm still part of it. Many, many people part of the show aren't studying there.
Okay. And where's She Kills Monsters being performed?
Pitt Street Theatre.
Brilliant.
So,
brilliant. Yeah.
And is this your first time directing?
Yes. Yeah.
How's it going?
Great.
How many monster drinks did you drink today?
I haven't drunk any monster.
You've done well.
I have drunk many Powerade Zeros.
Well, that's not quite so bad.
Yeah,
exactly.
Now, you brought one of your cast members with you.
Yes, our lead actress, in fact.
So are you the person that kills the monsters?
Yeah, I kill monsters. It's pretty cool, whatever.
So tell us all about your character.
So I play Agnes Evans. She's this totally cool cheerleader whose sister dies, like, within the first 5 minutes of the show. She is... Yeah, she's not really into all the nerdy stuff her sister was into. I really love playing Agnes. There's a lot of... I get to explore a lot of different emotions with her. She's a complete mess, and she's so rude and mean, but she also has, like, these silly, funny moments, and then also these dramatic bits, which I haven't had the opportunity to perform more serious. A more serious role, but... Yeah.
So who is this aimed at? Is this aimed at young adults, teens, children, adults?
I think particularly because of the popularity that D&D has grown, it's just aimed at people who love D&D, people who potentially want to get into D&D, people who want to see a five-headed dragon on stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't it interesting, though, because D&D, I think back to, you know, when I was younger, D&D was a thing, and then it kind of went out for a while.
But we called it the full name. It was Dungeons & Dragons. It was never shortened, was it?
And there were books, you know, those Pick-A-Path books and everything came out around that time. And now it's like, it's back in. It's such a big thing. Yeah. Were you a D&D girly, Violet?
I tried to play it once with my stepdad, who's really into it, but that ended horribly with my brother in tears, so that was short-lived. But no, I haven't played D&D. I want to play it, but I think that does... You don't need to know anything about D&D to watch the show, which I think is pretty cool. You learn along with Agnes, who knows nothing, which is, yeah...
Now, this is your first show with Stray.
Yes.
Yeah. Being a first-year uni student.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your experience with Stray, like if you were selling it to someone that didn't know what it was.
I think Stray is, super welcoming. You become friends with everyone who's involved. It's awesome. It's really cool.
When I sort of going down the table here, I guess I'm curious, Stray and with the Dust Palace, how do you decide what shows you're going to do each year or what themes you're going to put? So, Rachel, you know, what made you sort of choose this theme or others as you go through the year?
We got a booking from Canada. So we were like, okay, let's milk this as far as milk it and take this opportunity to remake the show. The show was actually first made in 2021 for the Taranaki Right Rural Cabaret. It's been at Splore twice, and it's been at the Hamilton Festival in 2024. So then our lovely theatre partner in Vancouver, The Culch, booked it last year. And so we thought, well, let's take this chance to remake it, make it better. And then we got in touch with some other theatres, so we're going to take it to Kirikiri and to Hastings after Auckland, and then we're taking it to Vancouver and to the Alberta Circus Festival in Edmonton as well.
That's so cool.
Are there any return, like, original cast or anything in this version?
Well, because the show's had so many outings, there's quite a large number of cast, because every time we've done it, you know, different people aren't available. Eve has been in it since the beginning, but Eve hasn't done every season of it. Jane has been in it a few times, and Louise has been in it a few times, and we've got a new cast member, Lizzie Tolomash, who has never been in the show. So, yeah, it's...
How exciting.
Mixing it up.
Yeah. What about you guys? How do you pick sort of what shows you do each year?
So Stray just has a sort of open submitting. So they have an executive committee, and it's open to anyone who wants to submit a script. And they'll pick the script, and that person will end up directing.
Because they have a bit of a plan, don't they? They kind of do a classic play, and then they do like a modern, and then they have their stir-fried.
Yes, so in the first part of the year, they have a classical and a contemporary, and in the second part of the year, they have a stir-fried, which is a bunch of small plays that have been written by students, and a larger one, which is one full play written by one of the students.
Awesome. So lots of opportunities. Mm. It's great.
Rachel, how long have you been involved with the Dust Palace? Because we've chatted a few years ago now.
Yeah, but I had only just joined. I think I joined early 2023. But I've known Eve and some of the team since like Unitech in the early 2000s. Yeah.
What is it that you love about sort of the style of performance?
I love circus theatre. I like the Dust Palace work particularly because it's not just circus. Mm. It's using circus to tell stories. So the theatre maker in me loves that. But I think for me, circus is so stunning to watch and so visual and really accessible. You don't have to be an arts person to appreciate circus because it's so... it's like impossible things happening in front of you. The impossible made possible is a recent line we've been gifted by Te Aroha Grace, who's from Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, who's been helping us to open and name the space that we're moving into in Ellerslie. So it has that sort of accessibleness to it that means that the storytelling can be lifted to a kind of a new place for me in combining theatre making and circus,
And I guess it attracts, I think of last night, it attracts corporate sort of engagements, which I'm sure helps towards the funding of everything else that you do. With something like that, do they pitch an idea to you or do you usually have to come up with the idea? I know last night was like
clients?
Like the Enchanted Garden last night.
Yeah, often it's a bit of both. Often they'll have a theme that they're running with for that year and then our team will take that and come back with a proposal. Sometimes it's a lot more open, what can you do? Sometimes it's, we've got this budget, what can you do?
But
it is a lovely, it's a nice way for our team to keep the creative juices flowing. It's great employment for artists and it's just great to be taking that art form to more places that aren't just theatres. Yeah.
Absolutely. Brilliant. All right, shall we take a music break, Emma, and then after the break we'll catch up on the arts journeys of these three fabulous people. Mother's Day music, what have you got for us next?
Well, as I said earlier, I went and saw Mamma Mia last week, so I thought, what better than Slipping Through My Fingers?
School bag in hand, she leaves home in the early morning, waving goodbye with an absent-minded smile. I watch her go with a surge of that well-known sadness, and I have to sit down for a while. The feeling that I'm losing her forever, and without slipping through my fingers all the time, I try to capture every minute, the feeling in it, slipping through my fingers all the time. Do I really see what's in her mind? Each time I think I'm close to knowing, she keeps on growing, slipping through my fingers. Sleep in our eyes, her and me at the breakfast table. Barely awake, I let precious time go by.
Slipping through my fingers all the time, I try to capture every minute. The feeling in it, slipping through my fingers all the time. Do I really see what's in a mind? Each time I think I'm close to knowing, she keeps on growing, slipping through my fingers all the time. Sometimes I wish that the picture and save it from the funny tricks of time. Slipping through my with an absent-minded smile.
Always a goodie.
That's always the part of the show where if I'm going to cry, I cry.
Yeah, such a good song. Such a good song. All right, back to our fabulous guests tonight. And Violet, you kick it off. Let's take us back. When did your sort of arts journey begin? Was it at primary school or before that? When did you kick into it?
I love that
she's just
journey.
Cracking up before we've even got the answer. I'm curious now.
Yeah, well, I did a primary school show, but, you know, I sucked horribly. I was terrible. So hopefully I've gotten a little bit better. We'll see. Jury's still out. But, yeah, and then I did some intermediate stuff. High school was... Loved my high school drama stuff. Who didn't? Yeah.
Was it plays, musical theatre? Like, what was sort of your genre that you enjoyed?
I was really into musical theatre when I was in, like, year nine. And then I kind of phased out of that and was doing mostly plays and stuff. But I did the musical last year, yeah, which Emma came and saw.
Is She Kills Monsters a musical or play?
No, it's a play.
It's a play. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Where would you...
Violet was a very good Shigogi in We Will Rock You, I have to say.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
I played a robot.
And you're at uni now. What are you studying?
I'm studying drama and design.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah. Nice mix there. Okay, what's the long-term goal? If we pulled you back here in 5 years' time, what will you be doing?
Hopefully still acting, and, yeah, just trying to do design and acting, trying to mold it in, like, intertwine it however I can.
So when you say design, do you mean, like, marketing design, or do you mean, like, designing sets and costumes, or kind of thing?
I'm super into video game design. So, like, dream would be, like, voicing a video game character, or, like, being that I would love that. That's, like, yeah. That's it. That's it for me.
Brilliant.
Sounds cool.
That's cool.
That's cool,
and that's still in the art space, especially now with the way AI and everything's coming in. Okay, Felix, take us back.
Actually, my first memory of doing anything to do with the arts is being, like, a three-year-old doing ballet classes, but it was literally just us doing Minnie Mouse games because we had no talent whatsoever. Because we were three-year-olds. And from that, I didn't do dance at all because I had no talent for it, and continued to do drama instead until the age of 18. And then I moved into crew, where it's so much better because I don't have any rejection whatsoever, and I love it so much.
And you get to wear black.
Yes. It's the best. Yeah, and that's basically my life. I've been in theatre my entire life, basically.
So with this experience of directing now, if you were to direct something again soon, what's the biggest learning you'd take from this first experience into the next one?
I would say... there's actually a lot. I have them written down in my phone. My phone is on 1%. I would say... probably create a list of everything that you want to get out of the show, like everything that you want your actors and everything that you want your crew to know about the show and know about, like, your goals for the show, instead of freeballing it and wanting them to read your mind.
Was it a bigger experience than you expected?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I really... So when I started the show, because it's really, really combat heavy, I messaged Thomas Julian, who's just the combat guy of all combat guys. He owns, like, maybe 10 swords, a battle axe, two daggers at least. So... I messaged him and I was like, hey, do you want to co-direct this very combat-heavy show? And he was like, 100%. And so I'm very, very thankful for that because he's way more experienced than me. So I've gotten a lot of help from him with that. And I think if I didn't have him, I would be dying.
And never break that rule. Like, we've been doing shows forever and we still call upon people to help us, friends, people for specific tasks and jobs that come up. Every show is different. Always call on your people. Yeah. So important. All right, Rachel, your arts journey, when did it begin? Take us back.
God, how long have you got? I feel like the elder millennial in this room. I'm probably actually a complete different generation. I also started in high school. I was a Western Springs kid before it was a cool place to be. It was when I went to Western Springs when people, my mum would tell people that I was going to Western Springs, they would go,
Oh.
Is she creative? And so, yeah, that happened. I did drama there. I was in, like, I did, like, the Sheila Wynn thing that everyone does and, you know, all the way to the Globe, which was amazing as an 18-year-old, you know, really fun. Then I went to Edinburgh Fringe my gap year and, you know, did the thing there and went to Unitech acting, did the acting degree there. Then what did I do? A couple of years out of drama school, did some shows here and then... got a bit itchy feety, went to Melbourne for a 4-month working holiday with the Melbourne Arts Festival and stayed for 14 years. Made shows there, still stayed in theatre, worked with Melbourne Playback Theatre Company for quite a number of years. I was the artistic director of that company for a little while. Then I came back here... it was COVID. I was in a hotel for 2 weeks. It was that time.
Wow.
And I've got two little kids. And so when the kids came along, being an actor became quite a tricky thing to do because you have to be at a place at a time for a long time and you can't leave. So I needed a job that was a bit more of my own, a bit more in my own control. So I moved into producing in that moment, but have moved back into directing with this show, which has been very lovely to kind of get back on the tools after a couple of years behind the scenes.
And future plans? Where would you like to be in, you know, 5 or 10 years' time if we call you back?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Look, I'm really keen on seeing the Dust Palace sort of stabilise and grow. I don't know. I've never been a future looker. I've always been a responder to opportunity, so I couldn't tell you. But I do really love, I love working with arts theatre makers and I really like helping companies to achieve their goals. But I also love making things, so I reckon I'm going to continue to be a multidisciplinary theatre person.
Are there plans for Dust Palace to open branches nationally, or do you think it's always going to stay an Auckland-based thing?
It's all about the resourcing, hey? Mm. It's hard enough to keep our doors open, so at this stage, I would. Although, we do have a really cool educational program. It was a partnership with Te Pau Theatre called Te Kura Mane Nido, which is an educational program which
And Tash is a part of.
Yeah, you know Tash.
You do.
Oh, great. Yeah, so it seeks to create pathways for Māori into the art form, and it's doing amazing things in terms of evolving the art form itself.
Great.
Through a Te Ao Māori lens. Mm. So Natasha and Kahuraki Bronson George have just got some funding to do some mahi down in Ōtautahi with that kaupapa.
Oh, fantastic.
So, indirectly, we're moving to Ōtautahi.
Love it.
Great. Awesome.
Now, when you say you're directing something like this, I mean, you know, you look at She Kills Monsters, there's a script and etc. When you're creating something in this sort of physical space, how does one direct it? Do you let your talented team sort of create some of the movement and things? What's your role in this? I guess. I'm trying to work out how scripted it is compared to, say, a script where a copyright company goes, and go. What's it like for you?
Well, we've written this show, so we can do what we want with it. But, yeah, it's interesting. Like, not coming from a circus background, the way you rehearse circus is completely different to the way you rehearse theatre. The circus needs to be made over a really long period of time. You can't make circus in a 2 to 4 week rehearsal block. So all of the circus acts are made over 8 to 12 to 15 months before you get to rehearsal.
Right.
So when the performers arrive, those little chunks are pretty set because you just have to. It's just too hard to make fast and to do it safely and to do it well. So it's more about, because it's circus theatre, what we're doing in the rehearsal room, which is only 2 weeks, is all of the character work that's either side of the acts or the storytelling that might be happening around the act itself, but the act is quite set in terms of the technicality of it. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's different, eh?
Yeah. It's totally different. Yeah, it's taken me ages to get my head around it, but we're getting there.
So, Felix, from your point of view as a director, what sort of, I guess, skills have you learnt from other people that you've watched that you've brought into this one?
I've learned how to trust people. I've learned how to actually lean on people, how to listen to actors, how to let actors actually do their thing. I think when I entered the play, I had a lot of imposter syndrome and I was really anxious about it. So because of that, I was quite short with the actors when they asked questions that, like, I found, like, quite, dare I say, like, things that I believed that they should know. Mm. So because of that, I feel like, moving into, like, knowing more about the production. I mean, Violet probably knows this better, but I feel like I've lent off a little bit, at least a little bit. But you can ask Violet on that one.
Hmm. I think as a new director, though, there's always a fine line between actor input versus director's vision versus how much can they say and being open to accepting offers and when do we stop accepting offers?
Yeah, when do too many offers actually spoil your vision and you're being too nice? It's finding that nice balance, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
And realising too that, you've got people been working with you, like I know with Dust Palace, you know, you've got people like Sam there doing technical things and different things who are experts, so let them be. Mm. Let them be experts. Share your vision and then let them do their thing. And that takes a long time.
Yeah,
I mean, I know when I first started directing, the micromanagement of every single department because I knew what I wanted took years for me to stop doing that.
Yeah, it's about getting those right people around you. Rachel, what advice would you give a young director and producer like Felix? You know, if you think of your journey, what would be a couple of key bits of advice?
I would say, just in general, but it works also for working in the arts, is relationships are key. Mm-hmm. And this industry and this country and indeed the world, everybody knows everybody. And so it's really important that you get the best working relationships you can with everybody you work with, because you will meet them again.
Don't burn your bridges.
You will meet them again.
And I'd say too, the outside eye is extremely important too. So as a new director, don't be fearful of getting people that are more experienced to come in and be that outside eye for you. I mean, again, I know for years I was had someone I really respected that came to every single one of my shows towards the end and would give me notes, and there would always be moments of me going, oh, I'd never noticed that they did that.
Or sometimes having them give notes to your cast to repeat what you've already told them, but because the cast hear it a second time from someone more experienced, they go, oh, that was right, you know? So that can be quite useful as well.
Mm.
Yeah. What's been your biggest sort of challenge, I guess, Rachel, on this house of YOLO? I guess it's hard knowing your venue's not quite, you know, you're creating something in a new space.
We are building the plane while we are learning to fly, and then we're flying at the same time.
Yeah.
It's quite insane. I got to a point one day where I was almost crying because I'm producing the thing, trying to direct the thing with Eve, and also setting up a venue. So, like, I had to think about when and how do the seats come in? Where do I get the cabaret tables from? What do we do about front of house? We need to set up a bar. I need a liquor license. I need ushers. I need a fire exit emergency plan. I need to know everything, you know. And those are things you don't normally have to think about when you're entering a theatre. You don't have to staff the bar or the ushers or bring
the
seats
well.
In.
Yeah,
you know, so that's been quite a lot. But luckily, again, asking for help is really great. I called in some of our wider team and I was like, I can't do all of these things. Can you please help me? And so they took over the booking the truck and getting the guys to move the chairs and getting the da-da-da-da. So, yes, that's been a lot. The other thing is this was supposed to be a remount, but of course we've turned it into a redevelopment because that's what we do every single time. I don't know why I even think we can ever remount a show, because, you know, the drive to want to make it better is always there. So we only had 2 weeks to remount a show. 2 weeks is fine, but to remake a show in 2 weeks is quite a lot. So, and the other thing in our new venue is because we're running our school and we have a church that comes in on Wednesday nights and Sundays
and the
school's on Sundays and the school's on 4 o'clock on every day, and the square dancers are coming in at this hour, and then the Auckland Friends of Philharmonia are coming in on Friday morning. So we have to be out on time. There's no going over, which is actually great because it means people get proper rest. We're not working overtime, but also means we don't get all the things done that we want. And also that everything has to come in, everything has to go out, everything has to come in and out, in and out, so we can't just leave.
Which is hard when you're feeling like you've got your own venue, but not quite.
So that's, I was like, whoa, this is a lot. But we're getting the hang of it now. Yeah, we'll be fine by Thursday.
And Violet, what about you? What's your biggest learning working with a new theatre company, first year out of high school, where you knew what you knew? What's been your biggest learning?
I mean, just also learning how to sword fight. Like, I have these cuts on my arms from yesterday's rehearsal and bruises all down my back from getting, like, thrown on the ground. It's in the script. I haven't done anything to provoke that. But, that has been so awesome. That's, like, I never want to do another play that doesn't have
combat. I love, though, that, as you said, that our Dust Palace producer, just her eyeballs just lit up, like, cuts? Like, what are we doing?
I'm like, health and safety, that's okay. I kind of cut myself, so it was just me being dopey. I, like, had to wrap my arm around a sword, and it's a lot, but, yeah, it's really cool.
But that's a good new skill, you know, yeah. Anything in that combat stuff is good skills to learn, especially like in a country that does so much film and television.
As long as you're having a combat call every single day to make sure those things are safe and you're not getting hurt.
Not cutting myself.
No. All right, time to wrap now. So give us the blurb. Where can people get tickets? When's it on? All of that sort of stuff. Felix, kick it away. She Kills Monsters. Go.
She Kills Monsters is the best combat play you will ever see. And to prove it to you, you can get tickets at straytheatre.com.
Dates?
Dates are 11th of May... 11th of May to the
15th
of May. Thank you so much, Emma. Doing my job better than me.
And if you jump onto Kick Arts, you will also find all the information on our events page. And we've actually got two tickets to give away to She Kills Monsters. So after tonight's show ends, jump over in the next couple of days to Kick Arts Facebook and Instagram and tell us who she kills and tag who you're bringing.
Not who you'd kill,
not
who you're bringing.
Kill, who you're bringing to see the
it's
show.
Not that sort of show.
And you might get a double pass to see She Kills Monsters.
Brilliant. And it's at the Pitt Street Theatre, so make sure you allow some time because there's massive roadworks as they're finishing the wonderful new train system there. But there are some good car parks nearby. And Rachel, time for your plug.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
House of YOLO is a very flamboyant, camp, extremely silly blend of internationally incredible circus with crazy, silly comedy sideshow. It's a cabaret. It's very interactive. It is definitely R18. There's some tatas in there and lots of naughty things. So bring your besties for a adults only night out. It's on at Ellerslie Arts, home of the Dust Palace. You can get tickets. There's a few websites. You can go to ellersleyarts.nz or thedustpalace.co.nz.
And the show information is on Kick Arts.
What's that?
All the information is on Kick Arts.
The show opens on Thursday and it runs till Sunday. We've got five shows, 15th to 18th of May. There's a late night show if you're a night owl.
And then head to Kerikeri if you're listening for the 23rd of May tickets at iTicket and Hastings on Eventfinder for the 30th of May. And if you're tuning in from Canada, they're playing from the 5th to the 15th of June and special performance on the 19th as well.
Oh, one more thing I missed. There's live sewing.
Live sewing.
The performers, after they get off their aerial apparatus, they get down and head to the sewing machine and then make the next garment for the next act. It's just outrageous. It's so crazy.
Okay, I'm going to the show.
That is cool. I recently was telling someone last night about an aerial show I saw in Sydney recently. Very similar style to Dust Palace. It was a brilliant night of entertainment, definitely R18. And at one point, the aerial artists went miles high, then came, of course, they said, get your phones out and video us. So everyone gets their phones out, and then they perfectly came down, snatched your phones, and took them up. And of course, they were recording. So they recorded themselves going up, and then they brought them down, gave them back to the people. Oh my goodness, that was gold. So store that one for future shows. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. The shock of watching all these people lose their precious iPhones and Samsungs up to the ceiling. But of course, they kept videoing. So it was a video of someone going all the way up and back. So cool. Thank you so much, because you've got a lot on at the moment, all of you. So close to opening. We appreciate you coming in to Kick Arts. Have a wonderful season, and we'll look forward to catching up with you all again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Mother's Day music. What's next, Emma?
Good old Carrie Underwood. You can't have a Mother's Day without her. Here is Mama's Song.
Nice.
You just don't think when your child is small that in just a few years, it's going to be completely different. And you look back and say, where did that time go? Goes by fast.
Mama, you taught me to do the right thing. baby fly. You've given me everything that I will need to make it through this crazy thing called life. And I know you watch me grow up and only want what's best for me. And I think I found the answer to your prayers. And he is
it's all songs for mums for Mother's Day this week, but it is New Zealand Music Month, Emma, and next couple of weeks you've got some great Kiwi tracks.
Yeah, having a bit of a break from Kiwi music today just to get those mother's songs in, but yeah, going forward, of course, we need to celebrate our good old Kiwi music.
Now, if you're listening in and want to know anything about any of our guests tonight, Emma's been busy and getting it all up on our events page, head to kickarts.org.nz. And if you've got something coming up anytime in the next few months, don't wait. Get in early because we do get booked out. Email us at info@kickarts.org.nz, and that can be theatre, music, dance, performance, comedy, books, you name it. We'd love to chat about it. Email us info@kickarts.org.nz.
Now, we're carrying on with a theme from the last few weeks, because this next guest is part of the New Zealand International Comedy Festival.
Absolutely, and a big welcome to Jess Karamjeet. Great to have you here to chat about your show, Ray.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, what on earth is Ray all about?
Oh, so Ray, if you've seen the show poster, refers to stingrays. Mm. But it's also got a couple of double meanings. So, yeah, the comedy show is basically my third hour-long show, and I play a bunch of comedy songs, and the show is about my mum and I going to Thailand and having a bit of an adventure together. So very
appropriate. Mother's Day thing.
Yeah, for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And an hour long by yourself. How long did it take you to build up to an hour long show? So I've been in the comedy industry for 5 years. I jumped into my first hour show relatively soon in my journey, but I actually only switched to musical comedy about 18 months in. But once I started writing comedy songs, they just, you know, they keep going and I keep building more and more. And this show I began writing in... I'm going to say November. So it's about a 6-month process. Yeah.
So does that mean you are sitting on stage playing a keyboard, or is it backing tracks, or how does it work?
So I play a bunch of guitars. So I have a guitar, and I have a guitarlele, which is actually a hybrid between a guitar and a ukulele that not a lot of people know about, but it's got different tunings, different strings. And this is a, would you like an exclusive, Kick Arts?
Yeah,
yes,
would.
Definitely.
I have been actually in band practice rehearsals all day because my show actually features a live band.
Oh,
so
cool.
On stage with me at times during the songs, we have a keyboardist, a drummer, a bassist, a lead guitarist, and we've just been having an absolute blast playing through these songs. So yeah, it's not just me. I'm not lonely anymore. It's a team of us.
And
yeah.
Are your band players people you knew before, or did you?
Yeah, coincidentally, really luckily, so two of them are stand-up comedians. And very, very talented musicians. So one is a music teacher and one used to be a bassist in a very successful band over in the UK. And then the other band member on keys is my housemate, but she's actually a really prominent Chinese Kiwi rapper in Aotearoa. So that's really cool. And then the drummer is my wonderful friend who has not played live music in a long, long time, but is incredibly talented. And yeah, we just got the drum kit. We made it happen.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Now, I love it that you started off by saying the inspiration was a trip to Thailand with your mum.
Mm.
Because when you read the press release, mm-hmm. it says debauchery, diving and drag bars. Just where did you take your mum? This is a pretty cool mum. I don't know if I'd be taking my mum on those three.
I mean, that's kind of the point of the show. You know, she's a 69-year-old Punjabi lady who you kind of don't traditionally think of as being in those spaces, you know, but... I'm bisexual. I'm part of the rainbow community. And so I've been trying for the last sort of 5-6 years to get her kind of to understand yeah. things like that. And so us going together to Thailand, it seemed only like the logical step that I would take her to my favorite island, a place called Koh Tao, where I learned to scuba dive. And yeah, there's just a really vibrant community there. And when we were there, it was also the week, I think it was, that Thailand created the same-sex marriage law. So there was a real sort of celebratory atmosphere, and it was just really beautiful. It was really cool to have my mum sort of be part of that too.
That is so cool. I love it that it also describes you as a Punjabi who calls sex holding hands.
Oh, that's my mum.
Oh, that's
yes,
your mum. That's the
mom.
Reference to mum. Okay, gotcha.
I think as a stand-up comedian, I have to be pretty forward about what I say and how I express myself and my sexuality. But no, my mum is, yes, I once had to reference something and she said, "Oh, Jessica, what did you do? Did you hold their hand like that?"
Oh,
and that was my penny drop moment that, okay, this is someone who is not very comfortable talking about the birds and the bees.
Is she comfortable that your show has been created with her inspiration? Does she know, or is this a big secret
yeah, no,
that we're spoiling
does.
Tonight?
No, she definitely knows. But she plays innocent, like she said to me recently. I sent her some copy for an interview that referenced how she was my inspiration, and she said, "I didn't know I was in this show." But she most definitely did. You know, we had a chat on the ferry as we left the island, and I said, that's going to be my next show. It felt, there's so much in it. You know, I'm a storyteller, a screenwriter first and foremost, and there was so much about our adventure that felt
yeah, like a story that needed to be told. So I haven't played her all the songs, and she's not heard all the stand-up, the comedy material, but she's definitely aware of my whole back catalogue. You know, she's heard and seen everything I've ever performed.
Does she live here? Is
no,
she coming?
Doesn't. No, this is the really heartbreaking point. She lives over in the UK.
Right.
So I will send her a video, you know, of
and
what
then
happens.
Get someone over there to video her watching it.
Yes, that would be lovely.
That would be
yeah. Yeah, I really want to. She's planning to come over in February because it will have been a year or so since we saw each other last. And I want to remount this for Wellington Fringe. Brilliant. And so hopefully she'll come over and the dates will align. But even telling her that, she jokingly sort of said, oh, it's a long way to go for a comedy show. Yeah, she's really cheeky. So, but I know it means the world to her that I use art and creativity and music to kind of express myself. So, yeah, she's really behind it, actually. Yeah, even though she doesn't conform to those sort of traditional stereotypes.
So tell us, when you're writing your comedy music, mm-hmm. where did your musical training come from?
Oh, yeah. So I actually, I'm glad you asked that. So people are aware that I hopefully am comfortable playing music and it's not just drones and awful noises the whole hour. So I, when I was a kid, I was a singer. I used to songwrite from the age of, I don't know, 6 or 7. And then I studied music to A level. And then in the UK at university level, I went and did a pop and world music degree. So I was actually trained as a jazz singer. And what feels really poignant with this show is I actually had some quite tough mental health stuff and physical health stuff going on. And I ended up dropping out of that degree. And then I switched on to do a creative writing degree and to focus my attention onto screenwriting. And that was the real change for me and the shift. I until this band practice with my band 3 weeks ago, I hadn't played collectively with a band in about 16 years.
Wow.
You know, real long time. And music was always something that was important to me and that I loved. My dad was a musician. He passed away 4 years ago. And so kind of finding my voice through music and songwriting and singing has been really, really, really important and special to me. Yeah.
And when did the switch to comedy come in?
Oh, so it was once I moved here. I've lived here for about 7 years now. And I was super inspired by the Comedy Fest when I landed in 2019. And I remember sitting and seeing shows and just thinking, wow, this is amazing. But the year prior, I lived in Melbourne. And at the 2018 Comedy Fest, I saw Rose Matafeo, her show Horn Dog, which was really successful. And I just thought, wow, this is a different way to be a comedian. I had grown up in the UK with predominantly sort of older white or male comedians, and she just showed me a different way, and I found her really inspiring. And then, yeah, a couple of things just aligned, and so I trained as a comedian and had studied it as well at my master's degree. I studied writing for comedy, but it took a long time before I went, okay, I'm brave enough to do this. I'll do it now. Yeah.
And I've asked a few people that have come in from the comedy festival. Do you inspire to be on Taskmaster?
Do you know what? I think my brother would like me to be on Taskmaster. He loves it. He's got the book of the games and all sorts. You know, I'm not amazing at kind of logic, to be really honest.
But they could add to the comedy.
Yeah, maybe it would add to the comedy. I would definitely find it challenging. It would be fun. Yeah, if they want to call me up, by all means, they know where to reach me.
Brilliant. Now, our first dealings with Jess Emma for many, many years was through your work at Elephant Publicity. You were sending many a guest onto this.
Yeah.
Have you learnt lots through that marketing field that's helping you as well market yourself?
Yeah, I reckon so. Yeah, so I worked for a wee while as a publicist in the arts. And so that meant that I was working with really great comedians or actors or shows, theatre shows, comedy, all sorts. And I definitely understand the kind of benefits of how you express yourself. But it's all just there's no logic to it anymore, I don't think. Certainly at the moment, where people are really struggling with their extra cost of living, it's just good luck when you get a good seat full of people, really.
I think, though, it's also for performers, though, understanding how to get someone to pick up. Like, it used to be that you'd get into the newspaper quite easily. You know, you'd get media easily. But I do think that having a public...
But we've lost half our media. This is half the problem. Yeah. We've actually lost the people that we used to email, and they would come out and do stories on our shows and things. They've gone.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I no longer work in PR, because the media outlets were closing, and so it meant that we didn't have anywhere to place guests. And then... Yeah, it's a real kind of struggle at the moment for artists and, well, just everybody, really. So it is interesting to note. But, yeah, I definitely learned a lot of hints and tips along the way.
Apart from Mum, who's inspired you in this journey from a comedy perspective?
And Rose Matthew.
Yeah.
Oh, so many comedians. I really like a duo in the UK called Flo and Joan. They're siblings and they play comedy songs.
Brilliant. Yeah. I got stuck on them the other day on my YouTube feed and suddenly I realised it was like 12:30, 1 in the morning. I watched, they were great. They're so much fun. Check them out.
Yeah, they're really great. kind of anyone who's great at storytelling or... I really like a comedian called Jordan Gray. She's really fantastic, again, from the UK, who writes her own comedy songs. And she's intersectional, you know, there are things about her. And so she'll play with her punchlines and really surprise people. So she's got a song and you think she's going to reveal this huge, big secret. And then it turns out she's talking about celiac disease. And so it's really fun. It's really funny the way she expresses herself. And I actually got to sort of touch base with her a couple of years ago. And, yeah, she was so lovely and welcoming and open. So, yeah, a lot of comedians like that, I think, are really great.
Brilliant. All right, time for a music break, and then we will do our quick fire question round for Jess. Another Mother's Day song. Have you got one about stingrays, perhaps, would be appropriate right now?
No, this is Martina McBride, In Ooh. My Daughter's Eyes. Ooh. So we're talking about daughters now.
Instead of her. Okay, all right.
Yeah, we'll give it a go, eh?
Okay, take it away.
Be, and though she'll grow and someday leave,
beautiful to think what daughters and sons think of their mothers.
Yeah. I wonder what ever happened to her. I haven't heard her sing any songs for a while. What's she doing these days?
Who knows?
Well, come
Who
on.
Knows? Look it up. Ask Mr. Google.
All right. Back to Jess in the studio. So you mentioned comedy school. Mm-hmm. So talk us through that. What was that like?
Yeah, so I studied comedy, and then after a couple of years of realizing there weren't as many voices who were sort of from a minority background in comedy, I opened the Pan-Asian Comedy School Aotearoa. So it's called Paxa Laughs, and I train up mainly women, but it's open to everybody, who are basically from the Asian diaspora.
Cool.
And so we have an 8-week course where they come and we learn things like joke writing techniques and performance techniques. And yeah, it's just a really cool thing to see people grow and learn and then flourish in an end of term show.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And how long's that been running?
So I started it in 2023. So I've done 4 cohorts. I'm losing track now. I've done 4 cohorts, but I'm recruiting at the moment for the 5th. So if anyone listening is interested in getting involved, we can explain how at the end. And yeah, it's just an opportunity for people to, you know, not necessarily become a stand-up comedian for the rest of their lives, but to find some skills that they can apply to different things like their workplace or just their personal lives as well.
How to be funny with your boss.
Yeah,
what, it can help, or if you're in an interview or what have you, if you're doing sort of small talk with people. Yeah, it can put people at ease.
How do you know if you're good at comedy? I mean, you know, we've all seen the audition shows and the music side where, you know, my mum said I was a good singer, but actually they're tone deaf in front of, you know, the idol type shows. What's it like for comedy? How do you know if you're just a funny person versus can actually stand up and do good comedy?
Do you know what? I think that's a really interesting parallel, because music is kind of factually, you know, you're either on key or off key, you're either sharp or flat, etc. And so it's not really like that with comedy. The parameters are so different, which means it's a lot more open for people to try and find their niche. And comedy is also obviously so subjective, and so is music, but it's not bound by the same sort of laws of just tonality. And so if people are interested, if they have that little seed in them, I think it's really good to give it a go because it's so joyful, really.
And I suppose when you do try out a joke, you probably need to try it a few times, right? Because it totally would be dependent on who your audience is, because some audiences might find it, you might have a dry night where they're just really quiet.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, we would suggest usually in the industry sort of trying out a joke maybe 5 times in different environments, and you can potentially tweak things, wording or the sentence structure or the inflection, you know, the tone you use when you say different words. But it's hard at the moment because there aren't that many open mic nights for new comedians. And so pro comedians, we just kind of will create and generate material and maybe try it a couple of times. You know, I have something called the Asian Comedy Takeover Night that I run, and that's at Basement Theatre, and it's every couple of months. And so as a host, I'll sort of play a little bit and if I've got a new song or whatever. But yeah, the opportunities are a bit more scarce, so you just have to kind of go with your gut and figure out ultimately what you find funny. That should be your first place to move from.
And is it about taking sort of good risks?
Yeah, I like that as a description. I mean,
because if you don't take a risk, you're never going to test if that joke does fall flat or absolutely succeed.
Yeah, and also as Emma said, the things that can make something fail or succeed in terms of audience laughter can differ each night. And so, yeah, I think it's so important to embrace that chance. Even things like, you know, for me as a musical comedian, I was quite frightened of doing that in the beginning, or being more sort of my authentic self and talking about things or joking about things that were more controversial or taboo. But I feel so much better, and I've grown so much more as an artist by doing that and by tapping into that truth.
Yeah.
Have we become too PC? You know, are we, as comedians, are we becoming too careful? I met someone at a theatre today who I hadn't seen for 20 years, and she talked about some of the crazy stuff we used to do years ago, and her response was, you know, or I think mine was, we'd be have to be very careful to do that sort of comedy today because we could offend. Do you find that space quite hard when you're teaching comedy?
No, not at all.
I'm pleased to hear
people are effectively... Comedians that complain about the world getting too PC are largely quite lazy because they're not trying to generate material that's not... It's called punching down in the industry.
Right, okay.
If you're constantly going for the sort of basic... people who are, you know, minorities, the disabled, people who are less fortunate than you, it's a kind of really cheap way to try and get a laugh. So I wouldn't necessarily say that we're getting more PC. I would just say we're learning more about how to stretch ourselves and be a little bit more, invested in the effects of our words.
Nice. Nice take on it. Yeah. Okay. Quick fire question round. Are you ready?
Sure.
Here we go. If you could perform comedy anywhere in the world, where would it be? What stage?
Ooh, I would love to go to New York. My mum's mum actually lived in New York for 35 years, and she sold the apartment just as I sort of turned and wanted to move to New York. So, that would be a real cool goal of mine. I've performed in Melbourne and in London and so on, and Edinburgh. But, yeah, New York or maybe LA, but I've never been to LA, and I know I like New York. So, yeah, that would be it.
Has there ever been a time you've been on stage that you've just wanted it to end? It's just not working and you're on stage going, get me off?
I wouldn't say that. I would more say that the feelings I might get might be different. I don't think I've ever had one, you know, I've never had like a heckle or something really bad happen on stage. I know that's not the case for most comedians.
Yeah, that's cool.
But that feels quite powerful to acknowledge.
All right, top three tips for a brand new comedian about to venture on for the first time. Top three tips. Number one, sign up to my school, you should say.
I mean, yeah, people could sign up to the school, definitely. Study comedy is tip number one. Understand where the wave of laughter comes, where the punchline comes, how if you say something in a different order, it'll have a completely different meaning or effect. I think that's where I start often with students. Number two, be mindful of the fact that what we say on stage, especially if it's about ourselves, if it's self-deprecating, it can get into our psyche a little bit if you're saying the same thing over and over again about yourself.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that would sort of tip number two is be aware of the way you're describing yourself. And number three is just don't be an idiot, you know? Be respectful of the other people on the lineup, the people in the room, especially if they're not paying to see you. If it's a brand new open mic slot, then you kind of go into it with respect of the fact that it is a workplace, even if you're not getting paid.
Nice. How much interaction should you have with your audience? Because some audiences are quite nervous about that component of a show. So how much is too much?
Yeah, certainly Kiwis. I mean, I'd never kind of express that some is too much because some comedians, even in the circuit at the moment, will just basically do a whole show of crowd work. But yeah, I think knowing that your audience, if you're in New Zealand versus Australia versus the UK, it's going to have a different impact. I don't really interact that much with my crowd just because I've worked hard on the material that I've generated and want to perform for them. But yeah, there can be fun to be had when you do play. Yeah.
Do you practice on your own? Like, are you at home literally practicing that, like we would learning lines for theatre, etc.?
Yeah, exactly.
In front of the mirror sort of thing?
Doing band practice and jamming to the songs that I've recorded, yeah.
Love it. If you could go back and talk to your 16-year-old self, what advice would you give Jess, the 16-year-old, about life and comedy?
That,
and mum.
Yeah, I would tell her that there will be lots of different paths that she can take, but that going into those choices with an open heart is going to get her to some really good places. Screenwriting. That one day, honestly, I'd probably tell my 16-year-old self that the TV show I watch every night, every weeknight, will be one that I write for in the future, and that I will reach my goals, and I'll surpass those goals, and then I'll find new goals, and I'll have a new career and have goals in that instead.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. That's cool. Going forward, what's in store for you for the rest of the year?
I am jumping on some TV shows. I'm storylining some TV shows. And honestly, after Comedy Fest, you just have a really big rest. It's 6 months of work, like I say. So, yeah, and we've got, I've got two shows this Thursday and Friday coming up at 6 o'clock at Q Theatre. And then it's done, you know? Wow. Yeah. Ray will be put on the shelf for a little while, and then I'll find...
Will you gather sort of the reactions and feedback from this crowd to sort of tweak it before it heads to Wellington next year?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I'm hoping actually that I'll remount it before Wellington at Basement in spring or around that time. So Basement are really lovely and work quite well with me to keep my comedy alive. So yeah, I will definitely listen to the feedback.
Emma, I think Jess needs to come back when Mum comes to visit and bring Mum in.
Wouldn't that be such a cool interview?
Before you head to Wellington. Yeah, or after. No, probably after actually would be better, because then we can get Mum's take on the show and on Windy Wellington.
Yes.
Let's see where Jess's comedy comes from.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan. Let's do it.
Where can people go to find out more, book tickets, and follow you or find out about your own comedy school?
Yeah, awesome. So they can find me on Instagram at Jess_Karamjeet. And I will pronounce that as my mother does down the telephone in the UK when she's pretending not to be an Indian woman. And it is K-A-R-A-M for mother, J-E-E-T. So that's Jess_Karamjeet on Instagram or Facebook. And tickets for my show, Ray, are on the Q Theatre website. And you can also head to the Comedy Fest website to see more shows. Yeah, see some live comedy.
And of course, it's on our events page on Kickarts.
Yeah.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, Jess. Lovely to meet you and catch up
Thank
in person
so
after
much.
Chatting for so long
yeah,
online.
Yeah, it's been fab.
Really appreciate it. And we'd love to meet you and Mum later.
Yes, awesome. Thank
you. All the best
Thank
for the season.
You.
Emma, the theatre list has just come in. So very quickly, if you're wanting some theatre this week, Assassin's still playing at the Dolphin Theatre. We've got Sister Act at the Playhouse. West Side Story is on by Ardent Performing Arts up at Centre Stage in Orewa. And of course, the play that goes wrong is hitting the ASB Award Front Theatre from this Wednesday right through until the 1st of June. So lots of great things. There's so much coming up though, I'm not even going to attempt to read them out. Sign up to the Theatre List at thetheatrelist.com. Get your weekly email and know what's happening.
Yeah, and support James with this Theatre List.
Yeah. Now, Emma and I are away the next couple of weeks, and so we've pre-recorded some amazing episodes. Next week, catching up with a different Stray Theatre, plus our friends from Titirangi Theatre, and a very cool group from Dargaville.
Yes, it's going to be a great show.
And then the following week, you're catching up with some international students and students here in New Zealand.
Yeah, we're having a special about studying performing arts in tertiary.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. This is my week to say goodbye live here in the studio because you're in charge now till I'm back in September.
I know, it's quite different, eh? There's only one other week that I'm away as well, but then the rest of the time it's going to be me and whoever
Adam
puts
their Taylor,
hand
Georgia, hopefully, coming in, keeping you company.
Unless there's some random person that wants to come and co-host with me.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're keen, come and support Emma. info@kickarts.org.nz. Now, we did say it was New Zealand Music Month, but we took a break this week, but we've got some fantastic artists to play over the next couple of weeks. Thank you to those that have been sending music in. Love it. Keep
Super
it going.
Appreciate it, definitely.
And feel free to dob someone in. You know, if you're a parent and your kid's been in the garage making great music, send it in. info@kickarts.org.nz.
And not just music. If you're a child or anyone, if you've read a good book, let us know, because we do have a book reviewer. And, you know, if you've got someone writing books or publishing poems, let us know.
Absolutely. All right. What's playing out on our Mother's Day closing, Emma?
Well, before we close tonight, yes, our final song is actually from one of my favourite musicals, Once on This Island, the musical. And this is Mama Will Provide.
Brilliant. Take it away. Have a fabulous week, everyone. And make sure you
kick some arts.
But on this island, the earth sings as soon as the storm ends.
And as Timon set out, she realized she was walking with old friends.
The birds.
The trees. The frogs.
And the breezes.
Timon lost all her fear. She knew Asaka was near her. You never been away from the sea, child. You're gonna need a helping hand. A fish has got to learn to swim on land.
Little girl, don't you be afraid. Oh, little girl, let me be your guide.
Oh, a pretty thing like you.
We'll
need a thing or two, and whatever you need, Mama will provide.
Mama will.
Down the road, little girl, you may lose your way.
Sit on
trees,
to sleep underneath,
sand
for your toes,
plantains
to fill up your belly,
to
burn your
face,
for making your bed,
mosquitoes.
Birds will fly, little girl, and the night will fall.
Stars saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some art.